You try to do everything right. Great line in that movie, Jim Carrey. He comes in the living room with a gun. He tells his wife that they're going to become bank robbers. They're just going to become criminals. He said, "We tried to play by the rules and we got screwed."
What are you doing with the squirt gun?
We followed the rules and we got screwed. We were good people, honest people.
That's a great line. We tried to play by the rules and we got screwed. What a great movie line that is. And it's the story of our lives.
There's something bigger going on here than what you're reading in the newspaper or what you're seeing on the news.
Put your affections on things above. And as we go up and we begin to see the big picture and we see where God is going. No definite article present in the Hebrew. It's not in the beginning. It's in a beginning. This was a beginning, not the absolute beginning of anything.
Hey everybody, this is Martin Zender floating above the waters of turmoil and chaos into another world. But no, it's not exactly a cruise. I wouldn't call it a cruise, more like a battleship, I guess. But the battle is not ours, it's God's. That's right, it's God's battle, but I'm telling you, I'm going to tell you what he's going to do for us today. I'm going to tell you what he's going to do for us today in order to give us peace in this chaotic world. He's going to cause us to set our affections on things above, not things that are on the earth. Colossians 3, starting with verse 1. If then you are roused together with Christ, be seeking that which is above, where Christ is, sitting at the right hand of God. Be disposed to that which is above, not to that on the earth. For you died, and your life is hid together with Christ and God. That's a figurative death. You're still alive, but we're considered to have died in Christ. And in spirit, where he is, there we are. We're going to be there someday, actually. Today we anticipate it in spirit. We behave as if resurrected from among the dead. That is Romans chapter 6. But whenever Christ, our life, should be manifested, then we also shall be manifested together with him in glory. I should get into verse 5 here. That was Colossians 3, verses 1 through 4. This really plays into my topic this week, verse 5. Hadn't planned on doing this, but I'm looking at it here, and it looks really rich. Deaden then your members that are on the earth. Prostitution, uncleanness, passion, evil desire, and greed, which is idolatry, because of which the indignation of God is coming on the sons of stubbornness, among whom you also once walked when you lived in those things. Today, we are facing a time when the indignation of God is coming on the sons of stubbornness. We are today in a time that is parallel to the days of Noah, and for that, remind me to come back here to verse 5. For that, I need to go to Matthew 24 and verse 37. For even as the days of Noah, thus shall be the presence of the Son of Mankind. For as they were in those days before the deluge, masticating and drinking and marrying and taking in marriage until the day on which Noah entered into the ark, and did not know till the deluge came and takes them all away, thus shall be the presence of the Son of Mankind. And so, being in a parallel time today, I'm going to look at the crisis of Aeon 2. What's Aeon 2? You're going to find out what Aeon 2 was, and what the crisis of Aeon 2 was, and how that is going to help you sort out what is happening today. Not sort it out, but understand it. and see that God is in it, see what place it plays in God's program. I'm going to talk to you today and tomorrow and this week about a big calendar. I feel sorry for anybody who's glued to the news if it's taken away their peace. Now, some people, of course, they want to know what's going on. And you're looking at me, oh, Martin, we're disappointed already. We thought this week you're going to give us the inside story on the Middle East. You're going to get into the troop movements. You're going to talk about Israel and the Palestinians and the Hezbollah and all these parties and factions, and you're going to put it all in perspective for us. Well, I am going to do that indeed, because I am Martin Zender. Of course, I'm going to do it, but not in the way you expect. I do the unexpected, not because I try to. That's just the way I am. I can't look at it that way. Hey, everybody's doing that today. All the commentators on the radio and the news, they're getting all caught up in the trees and in the chaos, and they're trying to sort out the mess. Well, I'm going to give you a perspective on it, all right, and I'm going to give you a revelation on it. But instead of zooming in, you don't like those maps you got on the internet? What's that one map site that you go to find directions to somebody's house? MapQuest. You can either zoom in and get the street names, and you can almost see the manhole covers on the streets and the trees and the leaves, or you can zoom out. I'm zooming out. But don't think that because I'm going to zoom out on this picture that you're going to lose sight of what's happening, because you're going to have greater sight into what's happening. It's too messy in the trees. There's so much chaos going on that we get lost in the detail. You know that famous saying, can't see the forest for the trees. Well, we're going to not only look at the forest, but we're going to back up, and we're going to see what God's doing. There's a great Jodie Foster movie out there. Well, I take it back. It's not a great movie. The first 5 minutes are indeed great. The movie's called Contact. I saw it sometime last year. You got to rent this movie and watch the first 5 minutes, then turn it off, okay? It's not that great of a movie. But the beginning is inspired. It starts with a close-up of on Earth, and then the camera pans out slowly, and the audio accompaniment starts with this modern television radio, and as the camera backs up and we start to see the Earth as from a satellite, you get older sound clips like from the 50s, and then it goes back and back, and you're back in the early 1900s, and then the camera pulls back and you see the Earth, and all of a sudden there's no sound at all. There's no sound because we're going back in time to the creation of this universe. It goes past the Earth, then you see the sun, it goes flying by in the solar system, and it goes back in the Milky Way galaxy, and wow, you start to see the big picture and you realize that there's something bigger going on here. There's something bigger going on here than what you're reading in the newspaper or what you're seeing on the news. The big picture. And this week, I'm going to show you that picture, and it's going to give you more peace than any commentators you're hearing today. No, it's not exactly a cruise. I wouldn't call it a cruise. More like a battleship, I guess. Are you telling, you're telling me that your calendar has 30 squares on it, or 31 squares? No, no wonder you're in turmoil today. My calendar has 5 squares. That's right, 5 squares. Yeah, because there are 5 eons. I'm looking at the big picture. This is God's calendar. God's calendar doesn't say haircut, 2 o'clock. No, his says deluge. Day of indignation, new heavens, new earth. Oh, woo! It's big, 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 really big.
It's bigger than the Ed Sullivan Show. This is a really big show. I like to see things the way God sees them. Now, I'm not saying he's not involved in the details. Involved is such a weak word. He is God of the details, but he's also God of the big picture. And based on the verse I read you yesterday, from Colossians chapter 3, we're encouraged by God to take the big picture, set our affections on things above. God isn't limited to that viewpoint. He is in the details. God is everywhere. He cannot be located. But he also is long-suffering and patient because he is looking toward the end of things. He's looking toward the consummation. He knows exactly where he's going, and he's plotting it on a huge calendar with only five squares. God is working out something called the purpose of the eons. And as you're going to see, as I'm going to point out to you, every eon closes with a crisis. And we are seeing birth pangs, crisis pangs in the Middle East today. And it's going to prepare us. It is preparing us for perfect government in the coming eon. Not everybody believes this. Probably not everybody even listening to me believes this. But in the days of these kings, Daniel said, God was going to set up his kingdom. And it's going to be a kingdom of righteousness. It's going to be centered in Jerusalem, the very place where the chaos is taking place today. It's going to be a righteous government. But the prelude to perfect government is chaotic government. It's necessary. Likewise, the prelude to the current eon, the current world we're living in now, in and on now, the prelude to that was the deluge in the days of Noah, the worldwide flood that prepared the earth for the governments of today. Did you know that before before the deluge, there were no governments, there were no countries. John Lennon sang about that in the song Imagine. Imagine there's no countries. I wonder if you can. Well, there was a time when there were no countries. There was paternal rule in the days of Adam. Oh, you're right. Some people don't even think that Noah's Ark happened. It sounds so like a kid's story, doesn't it? Noah's Ark. Sit down, children. We're going to tell you about Noah's Ark. It ain't Noah, it's Nick. I call him Nick. N-C-H. That's the Hebrew root. It means stop. Oh, I got to read you. Genesis 5. Lamech was Noah's papa, Nick's papa. And he named him Nick for a reason. I'm quoting from Genesis 5. And living is Lamech 180 years, and begetting is he a son, and calling is he his name Noah. It's actually Hebrew N-O-E, no, but it's based on the primitive root Nick, N-C-H. It means to stop. Listen to this, though. Begetting is he a son, calling is he his name Noah, saying, this one will console us because of our doings and because of the grief of our hands, because of the ground which Yahweh Elohim makes a curse. Unquote. That was a quote from Lamech, who came from a great line of people. Believe me, Lamech's father was Methuselah, and Methuselah's father was Enoch. Enoch was of Seth. This was the good line from Adam. This was the line of Seth rather than the line of Cain. Seth was given to Adam and Eve to make up for Abel, who was slain by Cain. This is a line of subjection, people in subjection to God. And God was going to preserve Noah. But in Noah, something was going to stop. There was going to be a stopping of what was going on the earth at that time. And what was going on the earth at that time? Well, there was a lot of sin. Humanity was ruining the earth at that time. This is the end of Eon 2. I know I still haven't told you where the five eons are. I'm going to do that probably tomorrow. But we have a time here where iniquity is growing and infecting the earth, and we are in a parallel time today. And listen to this, God is planning for it to stop. It is going to stop. God is aware what is happening. But before any change takes place, God has to bring about a cleansing. He has to clean and disinfect things so that the stage is prepared for the next stage in God's operation. It's always this way. That's why I want you to see the present turmoil in the Middle East as a necessary development of a preparation for a cleansing God is going to make. Many Christians today believe that the world is eventually going to get good, that mankind is going to become refined, at least believers are, and that Christ is going to come in some mystical way and perfect human beings. That's not true. We are indeed given faith, and we're given a measure of faith, and we are light in the world as much as we are able, yet even we are still imperfect. And we look for Christ to come to clean the house, to perfect us, and it's going to happen at once. It's not going to happen gradually like some evolution. And it didn't happen gradually in the days of Noah. And Christ, as we read yesterday in Matthew 24, likens these days, the end days, likens them to the days of Noah. And there was a sudden stoppage. God said, enough, it's going to stop. Was God mad? No, I'm going to get into this too. You think God was mad and really ticked off and vengeful when the flood waters came? He wasn't. It was not an angry God. It was a God who sighed and said, it's time for this to stop for the sake of the people, for the sake of the earth, for the sake of my development of my program of the eons. And God the whole time has in mind what he's coming to. And you can only see that as we lift the viewpoint and go back, or should I say up, set your affections on things above. And as we go up and we begin to see the big picture and we see where God is going, we see that he is planning on bringing all humanity to a perfect end, all in all, reconciling all things in him. But first, he has to make humanity understand via experiences that we cannot perfect ourselves, that human government must fail, even given the best circumstances. And again, we didn't even have human government until the deluge, commonly referred to as the flood. Now, some people, again, don't even believe that Noah's Ark is true. I had priests, and when I was a kid, they told me that this is just a story. You know, there was no such thing as Noah. It's all allegorical. You know, if I see somebody with a black shirt and a white collar, to me, that's just like a sign around their neck saying, unbeliever. Not only do they not believe what Christ accomplished on the cross, but they don't believe what God said happened. Many people just spiritualize this stuff away and say, well, but if you do that, where do you stop? Were Adam and Eve really on the earth? Were they real people? Or was this just a story that was made up to give us some kind of hazy picture about how things were? No, these people and their generations occurred. And there was a man from the line of Seth who was righteous in his generation. And he was a picture of Christ. And he built a big frickin' boat. And it was called a Thebe. T-H-B-E. It wasn't called an ark. That's an English word. Thebe. Love this word. You know what it means? This is really interesting. T-H-B-E. Don't ask me how to pronounce it in the Hebrew. Okay, I'll try it. Thebe. I don't know. When you put a T and an H and a B together, it's kind of hard in English. B usually has the force of in. If you put a TH in front of it, it indicates you. And an E at the end gives us a direction toward. So you put all those elements together and you get you into. In, you, and to. These three elements, B, T, H, E. You into. You go into this because I'm going to preserve you. And I'm going to draw parallels for you today, this week, I should say. I'm going to draw parallels for you to see that God is telling us, you are into me. And that goes back to my first verse yesterday, that your life is hid. Oh, isn't that great? be disposed to that which is above, not to that on the earth. For you died, your life is hid together with Christ in God. You into me. God hid Noah during a time of great indignation, and God is hiding you today. That's why I want you to see the big picture. I want you to be hidden from these, from this prostitution, greed, uncleanness, all these things that are happening in the Middle East. God is hiding you in an ark today because these are parallel times. I'm going to show you these times tomorrow. In the meantime, I'm Martin Zender. Five eons. We'll see you tomorrow. Want a picture of the times today? I'll bet you do. It's in 2 Peter chapter 2. Peter gives us all the bad news. I don't know why. That poor guy. Second Peter chapter 2. Yet there came to be false prophets also among the people, as among you also there will be false teachers who will be smuggling in destructive sects, not sex, S-E-X, sects. S-E-C-T-S, destructive sex. Boy, is that what we see? I suppose there's destructive sex as well. But is that what we see in the Middle East today? Many different sects, and they're all destructive. They're disowning the owner who buys them, bringing on them, I'm quoting again from Peter here, who buys them, bringing on themselves swift destruction. And God is preserving you from this. He is putting you in a metaphoric ark today, which pictures the literal ark of yesteryear, and many, quote, verse 2, chapter 2, 2 Peter, many will be following out their wantonness, because of whom the glory of the truth will be calumniated, and in greed, with suave words, they will traffic in you, whose judgment of old is not idling, and their destruction is not nodding. Verse 4, destruction is coming. Don't get nervous by that word. It's the Greek word apolie, right? It means from whole loosing. Three-part word, from whole loosing. It's a loosening. Destruction is a dissolution. It's not an eternal thing, but destruction is coming. For if God spares not sinning messengers, but thrusting them into the gloomy caverns of Tartarus, gives them up to be kept for chastening, judging, and spares not the ancient world, but guards Noah, an eighth, a herald of righteousness, bringing a deluge on the world of the irreverent, and condemns the cities of Sodom and Gomorrah, reducing them to cinders by an overthrow, having placed them as an example for those about to be irreverent, and rescues the just man Lot, harried by the behavior of the dissolute in their wantonness. Wow. Are you harried today by the behavior and of the dissolute and the wanton? You're in good company. Lot was harried. Peter was harried. Paul was harried. Noah was certainly harried in his day. And God is going to stop all this, and he does not spare the ancient world. Now, that was a world then, an ancient world. I want you to keep that in mind. It's called the ancient world, the world before Noah went into that ark, before Nick went into the Thebe. Before old Nick went into the Thebe, it was called the ancient world. Okay, now I want to go to 2 Peter 3. In the last days, Peter said, 2 Peter 3:3, scoffers will be coming with scoffing, going according to their own desires and saying, where is the promise of his presence? People are doing that today. Where's God? Here's why they're doing it. For since the fathers, this is still the quote of the scoffers, for since the fathers were put to repose, all is continuing thus from the beginning of creation. Things have always been the way they are. We don't see God coming in with big judgments. People have been getting away with murder for years. Where's the promise of his presence? It's always been this way. Ah, verse 5, they want to be oblivious of this. There's a fact that they're not quite acquainted with, that there were heavens of old and an earth cohering out of water and through water. by the word of God, through which the then world, being deluged by water, perished. Yet the heavens now and the earth, by the same word, are stored with fire, being kept for the day of the judging and destruction of irreverent men. Now, this is a then world, which the then world being deluged by water. This is not the flood of Noah. This is another destruction that came upon the earth before the days of Noah. Let me read to you Genesis chapter 1, verse 1, 2, and 3. Created by the Elohim were the heavens and the earth, yet the earth became a chaos and vacant, and darkness was on the surface of the submerged chaos. Do you know what the King James reads there? Created by God were the heavens and the earth was a chaos and vacant. It sounds like God created it a chaos and vacant, but that's not the right word, was. It's the same word here to describe Adam. God created Adam from the soil and he became a living soul. Same exact word here. The earth became a chaos and vacant. And so there was a primitive earth, a more pristine earth, and that was disrupted somehow. It became a chaos and vacant. And then at the end of verse 2, yet the spirit of the Elohim is vibrating over the surface of the water, and saying is the Elohim, become light. Starting here, we start to see the recreation of that earth. Now, Isaiah 45:18 says this, He is Elohim, former of the earth and its maker, and He established it. He did not create it a chaos. So how can the King James Version be right? God created the heavens and the earth was formless and void. Sounds like He created it that way, but He didn't. Isaiah 45:18 says He established it. He did not create it a chaos. It became a chaos and vacant. And that's what Peter is telling us about in 2 Peter 3, that the then world was somehow destroyed by water. It perished. This is not the flood of Noah. This was a more sweeping destruction even than the flood of Noah, believe it or not. What I'm telling you is that there's a reason Peter uses the term ancient world to describe Noah and his day, and the then world, which corresponds to a time before the days of Noah. There was a destruction of another earth before mankind even came to be on the earth, and we're reading about this in Genesis 1, 1, 2, and 3. The earth became a chaos and vacant. Now we see God saying, becoming light, and it is becoming light. We think this is the absolute beginning of everything. It's not. Genesis is called in beginning. It's not in the beginning. In fact, the King James starts Genesis in the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. That's not right at all. There's no definite article present in the Hebrew. It's not in the beginning. It's in a beginning. This was a beginning, not the absolute beginning of anything. But there was a pristine earth at one time that was ruined. It was ruined by what is known as the disruption of the world. And this is a necessary thing. God is always destroying things in order to set the stage for making them better and to showing His power. This first earth was a demonstration of God's power, but it could not demonstrate His love, His grace, His mercy, all these moral qualities. And so it was disrupted. It was turned into a total ball of water. It was called the then world. It was a total water ball at that time. And darkness covered the submerged chaos. And then God begins to make things happen. He brings an atmosphere and He separates the waters. There's waters above the atmosphere and below. He injects an atmosphere inside the water. And we have water above the atmosphere back in the days of Noah and water below. And then He causes the land to rise up and we see a recreation of that earth. That was called a world. And Noah's day was called the ancient world. Now, there's an important verse I want to give you in Ephesians 2, verse 2. Ephesians 2, start with verse 1. And you, being dead to your offenses and sins, in which you once walked, in accord with the eon of this world. The eon of this world. Stop right there. The eon of this world. An eon, as you know, if you've been listening to this show, is a period of time. It's the word ion in the Greek. World is cosmos in the Greek. A world is an orderly arrangement. It's the constitution of things, of human society. Every eon, every period of time has a corresponding world. There's a certain arrangement in every period of time. The eon describes the time, and the cosmos describes what's happening during that time. And we know that from this verse, the eon of this world, we know that every world, every constituted thing has a corresponding period of time. That's why we know that the then world, this pristine earth that God created that was disrupted in Genesis 2, if that was a world, then it must have had a corresponding eon. So that was an eon at that time. Then came the disruption, and then we have a recreated world, and that was called, Peter calls that the ancient world. That was the world that Adam walked on. And now we have Paul talking about the eon of this world. And so there was the then world that was destroyed by water, the ancient world also destroyed by water, there's the current world, and we know that there is the age to come, the eon to come, Jesus calls it, and that's the kingdom eon, and that we know there's going to be a new world, a new heavens and a new earth, and that's another eon. After that, we have a period of five eons that God has created in order to show his purpose. And the first three eons relative to this last two are evil eons. Each eon begins with a cataclysm of some kind. The first eon ended by the disruption of the world. You'll see that phrase in the Greek scriptures quite often. King James has made it the foundation of the world. Unfortunately, there's another word for foundation in the Greek. It's themelios. It means a place care. Those are the elements. And the word here for disruption is katabole, and it's downcasting. It's the total opposite of place care. And so the first eon was ended by a disruption of some kind that swamped the world in water. And God is recreating it in Genesis 1:3. It's a new world and it's a new eon. That eon ends with the flood of Noah. And Noah walked out of the Thebe onto a new world, a new arrangement of things, because now we're going to see the coming of nations. Where before we didn't have nations, it was a paternal type of rule, it was very lax. And men became evil, and they polluted the earth. So now we're going to try human governments. Quote, try, unquote. God doesn't experiment, but God is going to make sure that mankind knows that any method they use is going to fail. And so Noah walked out, as I said, onto a new eon in which we have nations, we have governments, we have rule. Guess what? This is ending in failure also, as we see today. This current wicked eon is going to end also with a cataclysm called the Day of Indignation. And that is going to give way to the kingdom eon or the kingdom world. And if you read Isaiah, you see that Israel can only come through the matrix via severe birth pangs. And I want you to see that's nothing new in God's operation, because every new thing he does is preceded by a cataclysm. And the scoffers, Peter talks about in 2 Peter, were unaware of one of these cataclysms, namely the disruption. Apparently, they had no regard for Noah's day, that God also brought a judgment on the world at that time. But that eon, the kingdom eon, it's an improvement. It's a good eon compared to the three eons that went before. Yet it also ends in a major cataclysm. Peter says this current earth is stored with fire and the elements will be combusted
by fire and with fire, and God is going to bring a new heavens and a new earth. That would be World 5, Eon 5, and that leads us to a time called the consummation. Death is segregated during Eon 5, but it's not eliminated because the second death is still in operation, but God is going to abolish death at the consummation. This was a rough sketch of the five eons, God's calendar. And if you're looking at it from an aerial view, I have a little thing I drew up there. If you're looking at the internet right now on your monitors, you'll see God's calendar, each eon separated by a cataclysm. The first one and the last one are more severe than the middle two. The first cataclysm was gigantic. It's called the disruption. The last one is the total combustion of this earth and the elements by fire. That's going to bring a new earth. In the meantime, you have these sub-cataclysms. Not saying they're not bad, but they're not as totally cleansing as the other two. These would be the flood of Noah and the day of indignation that is coming. We're at the central crisis of the eons. We are right smack dab in the middle of it. This is the most wicked eon that has been. This is the eon that crucified the Son of God. If you're wondering why you're having a bad day, look at God's calendar. You're in the middle of it. But there's a verse in Hebrews that says, at the consummations of the eons, Christ was manifest. At the consummations of the eons began to wind down at the coming of Christ. Folks, this is hump day. How appropriate that this is Wednesday today, because Eon 3 is hump day on God's calendar. That means things are winding down, which means things are winding up, because we're getting the bad eons out of the way and the good eons are on their way. I'm Martin Zender. I forget what I'm going to do tomorrow, but it's going to be great, you can bet. I made love with one person for 26 years. Until I was 50 years old, I had only had sex with one person, and that was my wife. I never had sex before my wife. I was a nerd. I was playing Pac-Man. Was not into it. Was not pulled by it. I mean, I was aware of girls from a very, very early age. Yeah, well, I was a kid in first grade who would, you know, chase the girls, give them a kiss, kind of like Georgie Porgy. How's that go? Georgie Porgy, pudding and pie, kissed the girls and made them cry. Oh, but that wasn't the case with me in first grade. Was I 6, 7 years old? No, it was Martin Zender, whiskey and rum, kissed the girls and made them, what was the last word? Kissed the girls and made them, oh yeah, it was hum. Kissed the girls and made them hum. Yeah, that was it. So, but I never felt the urge to conquer women. I'm a servant of women. So, anyway, that I just wanted to get that out of the way. So, anyway, during the eon of my discontent and your discontent, I'm not so sure it's a case of we start sinning. Because, as I described before, smoking and drinking, looking at pornography is not sinning. What I think it is, I think it's that we just realize how the world really was. I didn't know it was an evil eon. But Galatians 1:4 has been in the scriptures for a long time. Paul talks about being extricated out of the current wicked eon. That verse has been in there a long time. It was in there while I was home watching Gilligan's Island, The Partridge Family, and The Brady Bunch. I didn't know it was a wicked eon. I thought it was an awesome eon. Then I found out it was a wicked eon by a series of betrayals. I found out how people really were. I found out that not everybody was raised like I was. Some people were, many people were abused, especially women. They weren't loved. They were abused. This was a shock to me because I was so innocent going into relationships. Oh, this is going to be fun. Yeah, well, I found out different. Then I read Galatians 1:4 when I started reading the scriptures on my own in 1979. I got my first Bible, a New American Standard Bible, current wicked eon. And as life goes on and as things happen, you realize that, shit, man, there ain't no Santa Claus, there ain't no Tooth Fairy, there ain't no Easter Bunny, and the cavalry ain't coming. All we have is God. That's a hell of a transition. That is a hell of a transition to make from thinking that the world is going to provide your happiness, provide your contentment, provide your fulfillment, and you find out that it dashes you. I never found that out till I was like 50 years old. I was a late bloomer, way late to the game, way late to the evil eon. So that transition, though it's perilous, is absolutely necessary. And I think the transition begins with a break, and you realize that life is not going to fulfill me. Then you go to God. This is what God uses, should I say. God uses the breaking to bring you to himself. I don't know if it comes any other way. I really don't. I don't know if it comes any other way except through severe disappointment in life, being betrayed, being hurt, being devastated, disappointed constantly, your job and your marriage, your kids, whatever it is, your personal life, constantly not being able to do things you want to do. That's in the scripture too. I didn't know that was in there, Romans 7. The things I want to do, I don't do. The things I don't want to do, these things I do do. That wasn't my life for 50 years. I did the things I wanted to do, and I didn't do the things I didn't want to do. So then things got real, man. Things got real for me. I was devastated, absolutely devastated. I mean, it didn't happen in one day. It happened over a series of 4 years. And that's in the era when I said, oh, alcohol. Thank God for alcohol. There you go. Then I realized the things that God provided in order to endure evil eon. What? Yeah, now I know. So now, look at me now. I don't condemn anybody for whatever they do to get through the night. I'm not into sin. I don't like sin. I try not to sin. I'm not aware that I sin. I mean, as far as the list of sins in the Bible, either by Paul or in the Ten Commandments, I don't do any of that. I don't do any of that shit. Not to my knowledge, but like Paul says, I don't judge myself. I don't let other people judge me. But I'm not excused by this. Paul even said that. Paul said, I'm not aware of anything in myself, but that doesn't make me innocent. I leave it to God. God is the one who's going to deal with me. So I throw myself completely into the arms of God. And that's where we all are now. Everyone listening to me, we're there. And I know you have these happy, happy Christians. I was once one of them. I was a Christian for 3 years, from like 1979 to 82. Yeah. I told my brother-in-law, he might have been my future brother-in-law at the time, I told him, I mean, he was going through something. He was depressed. And I said, Christians have no reason to be depressed. That's how innocent I was. Christians have no need to be depressed. What's the matter with you? Life is wonderful. Jesus is in your life. The Spirit of God is in your heart. Be happy. Huh? All right, now I know. Now I know that that's all crap. That had to be blown out of me. And it was. And I'm here to report to you today that I think the place where you land after this naivety gets blown up is a better place. It's a better place to struggle. It's a better place to realize that it's an evil eon. It's a more spiritual place because your contentment and your joy is not based on anything the world can give you. Folks, it's Easter Day, so I can say this very appropriately. I put all my eggs in the next basket. And I recommend this for you. All of my eggs are in the next basket. The next one. The one in the celestial realm. I got nothing here. I don't expect anything here. And this is a great thing when you stop expecting things. It's really sad in a way. It's horrible. It makes you want to cry. Because you have all these wonderful expectations as a kid. And for me, they were fulfilled. I expected to get a drum set when I was 10 years old at Christmas. And I did. I expected to get a meal every day. And I did. I expected to be loved by my parents. And I was. I expected the Partridge Family to come on at 7:30 on Friday night. And it did. I expected the Brady Bunch to come on right after that at 8 o'clock. And it did. never disappointed me. I expected Ginger and Marianne to be there for me, and they were. Ginger was voluptuous, Marianne was cute. I knew this early on. Everything came as expected. Then you grow up, and you have, maybe the problem is we have bigger expectations. And then as they are dashed one by one, then you realize, I got nothing here. Nothing's going to do it, man. Nothing. And you stop expecting it. That's almost sadly, terribly a better place to be in. Because as a friend of mine said, I've learned not to expect anything and I've never been disappointed. Yeah, isn't that tragic? I don't expect anything, thus I'm never disappointed. I've come to that place. Maybe it's a place where you're just protecting yourself from trauma. You're protecting yourself from emotional things. I used to make all kinds of plans, my marriage, this, just my books and everything. I was going to publish this, publish that. I was going to be a famous author, blah, blah, blah. So you finally realize as these 10 soldiers start to fall, one soldier at a time, say, I ain't got no army. My army's decimated. In this life, I'm through. What a great line from Jesus Christ Superstar. After he's beaten within an inch of a life, Jesus says to Pilate, after he asks him, where's your kingdom? He says, I have no kingdom in this life. I'm through. There may be a kingdom for me somewhere if you only knew. Well, that was a line from a play in a movie, but there is a kingdom for Christ, and he knew it wasn't here. He says, my kingdom is not of this world. I think that's how we could walk through the cross, walk through that, because I was going to say he didn't expect anything, but he did, because he was disappointed. He expected his disciples to get it when he said stuff. I think he did, and they didn't, and so that disappointed him greatly. And I think the reason he rejoiced when he found faith anywhere in that God-forsaken land, he was thrilled. It comes out. Not seen such faith in all of Israel. And he found it from people you wouldn't expect it from. A Roman centurion, a Samaritan. Samaritan woman at the well, yeah. So, there ain't no Easter Bunny. So, we're living not only in the wicked eon, but we're living at the end of it. Where Paul says, in the last days, perilous periods will be present. I'll read that whole horrifying list. Well, we're in up to our necks. Some of us up to our eyebrows. But we have a rescuer, and it is Christ. Jesus Christ is our rescuer out of the coming into nation. I tell people how bad this life is, and some people actually still tell me, this is just like any other age. Just like any other age that's ever been. I say to those people, you look at the events of the unveiling of Jesus Christ. Look what happens when God's wrath comes upon the earth. That should give you a clue of how bad it is, because that's what it takes to erase it from the face of the earth, to erase the evil, the disappointments, the tragedies, the death, and to clear the table and make room for a new eon, for a new kingdom on this earth. But ladies and gentlemen, we currently are, spiritually speaking and proleptically speaking, we are in the kingdom of the kingdom in the heavens. We are in the celestial realm. God seats us among the celestials in Christ. We're not there literally, but Paul also says in another place, 1 Corinthians 10:11, I think he says, the consummations of the eons have attained to us. That is, everything God is eventually going to work out in the end to bring everything to a satisfying conclusion. He considers us to be there in spirit. Paul does. Paul said it. Jesus Christ dictated it. The consummation of the eons have attained to us. Not the consummation of this wicked eon, but the eons of the eons. The fourth eon, the fifth eon, the kingdom eon, the new heavens and the new earth. They've attained to us. But you're not going to find it watching television. You're not going to find it drinking or smoking a cigarette or looking at porn or anything else. I'm not pretending that you are, that I am. I've just been talking to you about things God gave graciously for us to enjoy to help us get through. But it's all going away, and I thank God for it. I'm not hanging on to anything here. All going away. Good. Good. Can't wait. Wish it would go away today. wish it would go away in 2.5 minutes. It is gonna go away. But until that time, our disposition has to be not here. Our disposition, as Paul says in Colossians 3, be disposed to things above. Be disposed to things above, not those on the earth. For your life is hid with Christ in God. And when Christ, our life, is manifest, then you also shall be manifested with him in glory.